Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. I just right now we're experiencing cold weather. Sorry, I won an all expense trip to Alaska, and it was remote. I could actually bring it home with me here. So
the polar vortex
is taking over right now.
I told somebody the other day, it's why I hadn't taken down my Christmas decoration.
Okay. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, welcome. Pat, you want to take us off?
Yeah, let's start with Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing. One of the things that I got a kick out of were the questions that the Democrats asked him about running an audit. You can't run an audit. You don't know how to run an audit. They don't know how to run an audit either. Neither do I. I'm not an accountant. But we all know that the Pentagon has failed its audit for the last, 7 years? I found this article yesterday, and I thought this was talking about perennially failing audits. The DOD, at the end of the year, federal agencies do this, you can't get more money unless you spent all your money. So at the end of the year, there's a spending spree.
Whether you need it or not.
Baseline budgeting.
And the fiscal year for the Fed starts October 1st. So that means September is big money month. All right, here's what the DOD spent in September. $6.1 million on lobster tails. That was $3 million more than they spent the same month in 2023.
By the way, Pat, just to tell you again, we mentioned this earlier, that the lobster tails, now, if you were on a ship at sea and all of a sudden you got lobster tails and steak, what that meant was that your cruise is extended.
Yeah, well, I don't think they extended that many.
Not that many.
I mean, they can't even keep from running into each other. I wouldn't give the Navy too much chance of pulling that off successfully. They spent $16.6 million on ribeye and $6.4 million on salmon. And they spent similar amounts on the meats last September. So this isn't new. They ordered ice cream 79 times at $113,230 and spent $117,787 on fresh donuts. Technology purchases also accounted for a considerable portion of the spending, with $5.1 million going to Apple products, including 130 iPhone 16 Pro Maxes, which are considered luxury versions of the base iPhone 16 model, according to the report. They also spent a whopping $211 million solely on furniture, $36,000 of which went to footrests. They also spent $1.2 million on musical instruments. But the largest purchases went towards expected items, with $3 billion spent on ammunition.
One thing they actually need.
Yay! And $7.9 billion spent on aircraft.
So was this food to feed troops or to entertain?
I'm sure it mostly went by in D.C., don't you?
Yeah, I'm being a little bit facetious here.
I don't think so.
Well, this is the baseline budgeting that Rush Limbaugh used to always talk about, where if you spent $100 in a year and you went to the budget people and you said, I want a 10% increase, and they said, no, we're going to give you a 5% increase, then you would claim that you had a 5% budget cut, despite the fact that your budget just went up 5%. And that's one of the word games that they use, which helps increase our deficit, which is something that they're very good at.
Yeah, and the same way that what they, most government agencies do, including the state of North Carolina, does the same thing. That your budget, you start off with what you had the year before, as you're saying, and that's your budget. You don't have to go back and justify all those particular expenditures in that budget.
As long as you actually spent it.
You should be have to go back and re-justify every one of those items to see whether it's still needed, whether it's being done efficiently. I mean, you get into auditing. And I did, by the way, just heard on the radio, they were talking about the amount of money we've spent in Ukraine. We've spent over $200 billion on the war in Ukraine thus far. Now, we can't account for it, and that was one of the things Senator Hawley was talking about, the accounting. Where is this money gone? They have no idea.
The Democrats have consistently voted against any accounting.
So there we go. We don't have the money.
No audit.
We're borrowing it. It's not like we have the money.
But
it's another $200 billion in debt.
But the people in L.A. can get the same $770 from FEMA that the people in North Carolina got.
As long as you go out to the URL location, you don't have a computer, you don't have an internet, you don't have electricity or anything, but you've got to go to a URL.
Well, in the Beverly Hills Hotel, I'm sure they have access to.
But the Pete Hegseth interview, did you folks listen to any of that? I thought he did a reasonably good job.
I thought he did a great job. I loved when he embarrassed Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. About the general thing.
Senator, I'm not a general.
The only thing that he did say that troubled me some was that he backtracked on women in combat.
He said he didn't have a problem with women in combat as long as they were subject to the same entrance standards.
He was talking about the equity and equitable parts of it. It was equal quality and qualifications.
Right now, the standards for the male says you have to be able to pull the 340 pounds, which would be a man with a 100-pound backpack. The standard for women's is 210 pounds. Now, that's a 130-pound difference, and it's hard to justify.
So right now, they're dumbed down so that women can pass. And he made a comment that there are quotas for women in infantry positions. And the article, 7 takeaways from the thing, said, at this point in time, the DOD does not require these quotas. Bullshit. Oh, sorry. You know darn well
Did you just shut us off?
No.
They've got DEI quotas all over the place.
And it's not just in the quotas, it's their performance. If you look at, I looked at this a while back ago about the percentages of women versus men in the various subsets, for instance, artillery, armor, infantry, so on and so forth, their failure rate, the women's failure rate, is dramatically higher than the men. So what you're doing is you're taking people and, even if they're holding them to the same standard, but you're wasting a lot of training money trying to train people that really can't meet the standard. We don't need women in combat. What we ought to be doing is we should be making sure that we're recruiting enough men to fulfill these roles. The only reason we haven't putting women in combat is because of some social pressure to make sure that women are treated equally as men. Men and women are not equal in combat.
No.
Take the average woman and the average man. If you get into a hand-to-hand conflict with someone, which you can in a war situation, hand-to-hand fighting, the women are at such a big disadvantage.
Well, it sounds to me like we can predict your position on transgenders in women's sports.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You can do that, too. It's essentially the same issue. But I was just disappointed that he did not come out and say, yes, I'm against it, except under certain circumstances. There might be some roles, like pilots and so on and so forth.
But he made a distinction. He talked about nurses and pilots and women who would be in situations near combat versus women in combat.
But we already had that.
Yes, we've always had that.
We didn't always have it.
Well,
when I went in 1974, we didn't have it. There were very restricted places that women could be. In fact, when I went in as a Russian linguist, women couldn't be intelligence officers, only intelligence enlisted people. There were, like I said, there were a lot of restrictions. So it took some time for them to get to combat support.
Okay, because I was under the impression that during Vietnam, nurses were very close to the front.
Well, they were, but that wasn't considered
in
combat
hospital
support.
Settings. They weren't medics in the infantry units. They weren't serving as, you know, if somebody gets shot and you call for a medic, women were not doing that.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, if you're I was trained in infantry in the Army. The idea that you would mix the genders and those circumstances, how you have to live, it's just ridiculous. It's totally, anybody that's done it realizes that it's, and like I said, it's not necessary. Let's recruit enough men. Let's find out why we're not recruiting enough men and solve that problem.
Where are you going to plug in your blow dryer?
curling iron.
The other part of this, too, is how many of our congressmen or women are military vets?
At least one of the screeching women.
Duckworth. Tammy Duckworth.
She
really beclowned herself.
And she's a wounded vet, is she not?
Yeah, she's an amputee.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the stuff I think is just for political posing.
Theater.
Yeah, that's a good word.
I got a kick out of him complaining about his drinking. Oh. Have they talked to anybody in the military?
Well, I think the better part of it was when the, was it Moser, came on and said, have any of you been in here for a vote in the evening where they've come in drunk? That was very telling. That was very telling.
And he went on to say, how many have divorced because of an affair?
Let's hear who the 18 million slush fund went to clear.
Yes.
Of us remember Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
But also keep in mind that Hegseth also in his opening statements in the beginning acknowledged and admitted he was young, he made mistakes, he was in the military arenas, and he came back a different person. He also thanked the Lord and Jesus Christ for his redemption and forgiveness and for moving forward, and I think that is key, in my opinion, of his character.
That's why the Code Pink people were holding signs, no Christian jihad.
My only concern, which I think is somewhat legitimate with this criticism of Hegseth, is not him and not him particularly, but someone who has not supervised large numbers of people in a large organization, that's going to be a big challenge because it is a lot different. Supervise a small group, but then when you have thousands, you got to go about it much differently. Hopefully, he'll have enough assistance to help him get the job done.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he's going to find that to be the biggest challenge.
There's layers and layers.
Also, look at the current leadership. I mean, really.
But one of the senators said, he Googled the requirements for a Secretary of Defense, and it was be a civilian. That's it.
Be a civilian, that's right. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thanks for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you've got another article that you're...
I go through and pick the articles that attract my imagination. And and this one was on January 9th. Cannabis store operators call for loan forgiveness.
The cannabis store operators.
In New York City.
Okay.
And Kathy Hochul has been called on to forgive tens of millions of dollars. So this is not an insignificant amount. Of high-cost loans, the operators say it threatens the viability of their business.
Not enough potheads in New York?
They were trying to start, according to Kathy Hochul, a new billion-dollar business in New York.
This is to offset the congestion tax.
How can you lose money selling pot?
Not enough potheads in New York.
No, not enough potheads that don't already have a connection down the street.
That's cheaper.
Yeah, why do you need to go to a pot store? It's ridiculous. And why would you give them... the loans were made by a social equity loan fund created by the Hochul administration to provide capital to dispensary owners, but it has instead perpetuated many of the economic inequities it was designed to combat.
Well, that's no big surprise when the government starts trying to fix something that it gets worse.
Right.
That's just kind of an MO.
And those were high interest loans?
They were high, 13% interest rate.
Good.
Who gets
grief.
So if you get a $1.9 million loan like this one guy did with a 13% interest rate, and then have trouble making your monthly payments within a year, that's a duh.
Sounds like a loan shark.
It does. It does. Well, a legal loan shark.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in that area about the marijuana, what's happening in the country is China is buying up. We've talked about this in the past, China buying up farmland. And one of the things they're doing is they're focusing on some of the states that allow, hemp to be grown. And what they're doing, they're importing people from China to work their farms, and that's what they're doing. They're going into this. I know, but what I'm saying is it's using the drug issue for a nefarious purpose. And here's China stepping in. You know, they're already sending the fentanyl over and working with the cartels, and now. They're moving into the marijuana business in the country.
These are black business owners.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying it's directly related, Pat. All I'm saying is that the whole drug thing is being manipulated, and I think China's—they've got the nefarious reasons for doing it.
Well, of course. I was a taxpayer in New York, I'd think that was pretty nefarious. Because if these loans are forgiven or defaulted on, which is more likely, the taxpayers are on the hook.
Well, I don't understand how these executives, including the president, have the authority and to just forgive loans. I mean, there's a contract between individuals. And then somebody comes in and they say, we're going to forgive. And they don't forgive the loan. They transfer the payment to the people that are not involved in that contract. It's like the student loans. The rest of us taxpayers are paying them off. They don't just disappear into thin air. Those people get paid, but the taxpayer pays them. And, you know, they always say, well, they're forgiving him. They're really just making other taxpayers, us, pay for the student loans for that the people are not paying.
You know,
they should be paying.
Alan, I was going to say that one of the items that we brought up was, with just days left, the president, Joe Biden, has delivered a final controversial blow to the student loan debt. He's canceled $4 billion in student loans for another 150,000 borrowers, brings the total to 183,600 million forgiven.
But I don't understand how that works when the Supreme Court has already said he can't do that. Is it a letter that goes out to an individual saying your loan is forgiven, so okay, I don't have to pay anymore, and then the court says, no, that was illegal. Do I then get another letter that says, oops?
No. The president's been doing workarounds.
Meaning?
He's been finding loopholes in the law and in the opinion that allows him to make these.
Well, who is choosing whose loans are forgiven?
Any of them that they can find loopholes for.
Right.
Because it's his strategy to forgive as much as possible. And I do, your points made earlier, I think is key. Forgiveness makes it sound benign,
yeah.
But it's not forgiveness. It's an approved default that the rest of the citizens has to
get. Yeah, it's a transfer of payments.
Right.
Yes.
Now, I know going way, way, way back, and I'll bring up our oldest daughter, going way back, there were loans that she took out that were paid back, and the principal was paid back, and some of the interest was paid back, but based on this category or class of loans, enough interest had been paid back that, and there were higher interest loans, but enough interest had been paid back that the rest of the interest was forgiven for the whole class of loans. Now, that was a state-run fund.
Yeah, and this North Carolina has the same thing. For example, if you a major in nursing or you major in education, then the likelihood is that you can get most, if not all, of your student loans forgiven. That's a state thing, in order to encourage more people to go into those fields. But again, as Glenn's saying, when the government gets involved with it, you know, it's like we talked last time about State Farm and the insurance companies out in California. And it looked like people were blaming the insurance companies. But when you research that, you find that State Farm over 2.5 years ago, State Farm and some of the other insurance companies asked for an increase in the amount of the cost of those policies, specifically having to do with fire, because that's where the big risk was in that area where California has not been managing the risks in the fires, and they have the high wind and all. Okay. What happened? The government of California, the insurance commission, kept denying their ability to raise it. So the insurance companies got to the point where they're going to be losing tremendous amount of money if they allow these policies to be renewed. They didn't cancel anybody's policy. They went in and refused to renew it, is what I was told. Now, eventually, the state of, I think, California allowed them to increase it. By then, it was too late because the policies had already gotten to the end and weren't renewed. And, you know, there's something wrong with this idea, too, of this federal Emergency Management Act, where the government steps in, and if you don't have insurance, then they pay for it. Like we had the when Hurricane Florence came through this area, we had people who did not have flood insurance. They were living in a high-risk area, okay? Their houses got flooded. They chose not to have flood insurance, which they could have had. It was expensive. I understand that. So what happens? They get flooded out. They apply to FEMA. FEMA comes in, raises their houses. Who pays for it? The taxpayers pay for it. Again, it's not. So basically what's happening is the federal taxpayers are becoming an insurance company. We are insuring people who decide not to get insurance. And that would be like, you know, you do with the automobile. Let's say you have an automobile and you don't want to get collision insurance. You don't have to have collision insurance. You have to have liability. So then you, what happens is you decide not to get collision insurance. You go out and you have an accident. And then you go to the taxpayer, the other people, and say, you pay to get my car repaired. There's something inherently, and that's where the socialism, communist kind of attitude comes, where the government steps in, like you were saying before, when the government gets involved in stuff, they screw it up. And this is the government's becoming the backup for people who are not doing the right thing to protect themselves. If you're in a flood-prone area and you don't have flood insurance, you get flooded.
That's your responsibility. The only place you can buy flood insurance is from the feds.
Okay. Yeah.
And they have total control over how much you pay. So if you ask for flood insurance, you lose the ability to forecast what your
it's not a free market.
Your mortgage payment's going to be. All right.
Sorry. I want to say I'm coming from a different side on the insurance because the whole idea of insurance is cost sharing, and it is a risk for everybody. And we've gone through it with homeowners insurance and flood insurance and hurricane insurance and medical insurance. You're sharing the risk. My problem with insurance companies and the rates is based on where you live. Like east of 95, our insurance rates are higher than they would be in the mountains. However, the mountains just got flooded. But if you look at an actuary table, we, in this part of the state, actually pay higher premiums for the same coverage. So I think if insurance is supposed to be cost sharing, it should be equal across the mass, not like when we didn't have medical insurance when Glenn retired, we went with Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's not insurance. It's cost sharing. Mm-hmm. And it worked so much better. A matter of fact, it was even cheaper than what we've got now with Medicare.
You know, with you were just mentioning, going back to Willow Kelly, who was out on the Outer Banks and working with the insurance commissioners, because on the coast, we all were charged more for the insurance because of wind damage. Well, we build things better for wind damage, and yet we're still charged more and more and more. And to your point, the mountain area may not have the same wind damage. Now they've got some crazy flood damage.
My point is, the point of insurance is cost sharing.
Yes.
And I think that the cost to everybody would be more easily affordable if we weren't punished for that. And maybe, Alan, to your point of you choose not to have flood insurance, if you are in a floodplain and have a mortgage, you are required to have.
Yeah, but that's your choice to buy there. If you don't have the money, you don't want to pay for that insurance, you don't have to buy that house.
Well, that's true. That is true. But I'm just saying that if you have a mortgage, you have to have the mortgage insurance. So I am not not subsidizing that flooded house if they had a mortgage.
Well, apparently somebody has a mortgage without having to pay flood insurance, or we wouldn't have had to get FEMA to lift all those houses.
Well, some of those people bought those houses without a mortgage. Not everybody has a mortgage on their house.
Especially
but if you have a mortgage, there's more requirements. You're right. Or you come in, you pay cash. You don't need a mortgage. But the point is, it's like the risk. If you live in a high-risk area and that's your decision, then you, in my opinion, you should take on the risk. And if you want to do that, that's your decision. I'd like to see somebody show me in the Constitution where the federal government has responsibility for paying for people's insurance. Show me that in the Constitution.
They don't have that ability.
For the common welfare.
Yes.
And they'd like you to believe.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters, and we'll be right back. This is a CCTA Wake Up Call show. Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Tell Mary, you're going to take us a different direction?
The Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act has passed the House of Representatives. All the Republicans voted for it, and only two Democrats voted for it. And it was interesting to me that Martina Navratilova has spoken out against the Democrat, saying, grow a spine.
Well, she's been very vocal against transgenders in women's sports for a long time now.
Well, the Biden administration, just last week, there was an article about they were reversing their rule implementation under Title IX because of all the court cases that were
pending
because there had been suits that had received a stay. And that's where the Moms for Liberty had come in and trying to get people all over the country involved in that lawsuit. So I see this as being a connection to that, the federal spending and the Title IX and the boys and girls sports. I see it as all one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quick, Kim, if President Trump has his way and the Department of Education becomes a historic
Bye-bye.
Yeah. With the problems that we've had in North Carolina with this, the gender stuff, if the feds are no longer involved, what does that do in that suit?
It would have to become a state item, and I'd sure like to believe with the, even though we've got a Democrat governor and attorney general, we've got majorities, big majorities. So I would like to think that we would
that the state.
I was under the impression that they passed a law to that effect last year, General Assembly.
Yeah.
That they
well,
did
it was
pass.
The parents,
they did
the
pass
parents
something.
Parental rights. Involvement Act.
That restricted the
federal law takes precedence.
No, it was the Parents' Bill of Rights that I think you're referring to.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now this was about the boys in the girls' sports and in the girls' locker rooms, and the lawsuit was under the Title IX, which did involve the sports and the bathrooms. And I would keep in mind that our current governor was the attorney general when we were fighting those bathroom bills. So I wouldn't put a whole lot of faith in him doing the right thing.
Yeah,
well,
we saw situations where the attorney general in North Carolina refused to defend laws passed by the legislature.
Who is currently our governor.
And he's now our governor.
Right.
And our attorney general is of the same political persuasion, and we are quite likely to see that again.
Yeah, it's,
don't give them any cover.
Parents, the parents need to step up and get more vocal in the schools, show up at the school board meetings, tell the school board that boys are boys and girls are girls, and they are not cats and they are not dogs, and that they should not affirm anything that was not of nature by God at birth. Amen.
We don't really hear a lot about transgender in the other animal community other than humans. I don't know anything of any animals.
Well, no, the wackos have put forward transgender animals.
Transgender.
Oh, yeah. They find it everywhere.
Right. Yes. Folks, I do know frogs somewhere are yeah, okay.
Well, my point is we as the public and as parents should not be affirming in school, against other parents' wishes, things that are not, they don't belong in school, basically.
They don't belong there.
And we also should make sure that the parents are aware of what's going on in the schools with their child.
Agreed.
Mary, how are we going to make sure that parents know what's going on with their child? Isn't that being a parent?
Well, that's being
well,
a parent,
but parent the parent.
But there should, in the situation, and we've seen it, where a child claims to be transgender and is transitioning in school, and the teacher is instructed not to tell the parents, that should be against the law.
That should be. I agree.
Well, if you think about it in terms of just rational, you have to have a parent's note to get an aspirin given to you at school. But you could go to school and tell your counselor that you think that you are non-binary, and they can refer you to get puberty blockers.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem comes. I can't get an aspirin, but I can get a hormone that's going to change my makeup.
That's insane.
That's unreal.
Thank God we live in a small southern town, right?
That's right. I was thinking that just the other day.
Alan, you wanted to take us in a different direction.
Yeah, Bob, thanks.
Energy direction.
Yeah, this is something. Of course, I think everybody knows, obviously, that one of Donald Trump's primary objectives when he gets back in office is to make not only the United States energy independent again, but to make us a supplier of energy worldwide, particularly to offset the control that Russia and some of these other countries have the resource. And I think based on what Biden's administration has done, all the efforts they've made in the last couple of months to block what Trump wants to do, like the executive order that would restrict the placement of any sort of oil drilling offshore up to, what was it, how many, some 1.5 million acres or something involved, all the East Coast and West Coast and the Gulf of America. I think what Trump should do, he ought to come out with just as strong a program which goes in and does exactly the same thing. For example, I think they ought to stop all tax incentives for any sort of solar and wind energy, which is what's driving it now.
And also I'm going to add tax incentive for EV vehicles.
Yeah, that also should be stopped. And they should, in my opinion, remove all the unnecessary restrictions against nuclear energy.
Tell Doge.
And I hope that they do that, because that's the only way to solve this problem. The Carolina Journal, that's from the
John Locke
Foundation, they had an article that they've researched this, and it's unbelievable how much it's going to cost to replace and meet the goals that are already in place about renewable energy. And part of the problem is you've got to have so much redundancy, because the sun doesn't shine all the time and the wind doesn't blow all the time. So you've got to have a system that's four or five times more than you actually need, because to deal with the variations and the fluctuation.
Yep.
And it's just going to destroy this country. And it's a good opportunity for Trump to come back and do away with all this stuff. And I hope he does. And wind farms off the coast, they ought to be eliminated. They ought to be stopped.
besides the fact that the wind farms, knowing somebody that's deeply involved up in the Rhode Island area, the wind farms are just the number of whales that have been that have died recently and come ashore because of the footings when they're putting in the footings for the windmills out there. Yeah. The whales that rely on sonar, all of a sudden their sonar abilities are just totally destroyed.
Yeah.
I want to go to weather prediction and the latest indigenous knowledge intrusion into government. I brought this up last show or show before last about how at NOAA, Biden had dictated that they would have to use indigenous methods, indigenous knowledge on how to forecast the weather. And we were talking about rain dances.
And sticks.
Okay. Now, this is new. As of January 11th, government officials turned to indigenous knowledge to combat Californian wildfires.
The wildfire, the California wildfires, and so what are we going to do?
This was in November 2022. The Biden administration directed over two dozen federal agencies, including the NSF, whatever that is, National Science Foundation, to incorporate indigenous knowledge into their research policies and decision-making. The memo defined indigenous knowledge, also known by the name traditional ecological knowledge, as a body of observations, oral and written knowledge, innovations, practices, and beliefs developed by tribes and indigenous peoples through interaction and experience with the environment that is applied to phenomena across biological, physical, social, cultural, and spiritual systems.
So we could expect better forecasting. You know, so is that what we're hoping to
spend $500,000 in grant funding tailored toward implementing indigenous knowledge into wildfire preparedness plans in California? One such grant sought to create a fire plan by interconnecting knowledge systems to advance the science and application of fire in ways that respect tribal sovereignty.
So this is applying DEI principles to weather and DEI principles to fire management.
Yes.
Okay, so
out great.
Never have to go to a fire academy again. Folks, you can just go.
You wonder if that had anything to do with the shrub that California was canceling their controlled burns over to save.
And putting up metal poles for the power.
Yeah, they also announced, I heard, I think it was yesterday, that they arrested a suspect believe that was going around with a blowtorch and starting, maybe not all the fire, but some of these fires. Who would it turn out to be?
An illegal alien.
It was here, had been arrested multiple times for various different crimes, was never deported, because this is in California, they don't deport any of these illegal aliens. So there you get another example of damage being done by these illegals. So.
I do have good news. The Washington Post has officially lost 90% of its readership.
Deservedly so.
That's a help.
There was something on the news about the owner of the Los Angeles Times or whatever their big paper is.
He said that endorsing Karen Bass was a mistake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's getting some folks' attention.
Well, some of the things that bother me about the fire is that there were multiple fires that started at the same time. And we're hearing an awful lot about the fire mitigation that wasn't done in advance. I want to know where the spark came from that started three fires at the same time when there wasn't a storm, there wasn't a lightning strike. There have been articles about the homeless setting fires. There have been articles on arson. There has been even some terrorism ideas with the gentleman with the flamethrower. I'm just indicating that the people that live in these areas knew in advance that there was a possibility of fire coming, and they did nothing to stage their people in advance of this, like how we prep for a hurricane. So it's a bigger picture than just a political picture.
Oh, it's a failure on multiple levels.
And I do know from reading a fire and rescue site that original dispatch on the Palisades, they only dispatched 5 fire trucks for what they considered a major blaze because they needed to keep all other forces in reserve.
Other than the ones they sent to Ukraine.
Other than the ones they sent to Ukraine.
That just bothers me.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to us, to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you're going to take us a different direction.
Mary asked me to explain what happened with Trump in the sentencing on the hush money case. They made those felonies by reigniting a misdemeanor and combining it somehow with a federal statute on campaign violation.
And they also had to backdate the.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Statute of limitations.
Oh, yeah. At any rate, that was the reason for the felonies. That's the reason why they put the felony in there, because the time limitations on a misdemeanor had already run out. You cannot punish somebody for a misdemeanor for longer than 364 days. So if you get a year in jail on a misdemeanor, you actually get 364 days, okay? At any rate, Mary asked me that a non-disclosure agreement's not illegal, right? No, it's not. And calling it a hush money case doesn't make it illegal. It's not illegal. What New York's case turned on was that Trump repaid Michael Cohen for the money that Cohen had paid to what's her face?
Stormy Daniels.
Stormy. I was going to say Stony. Stormy. which he charged Trump as legal fees. So Trump then put legal fees.
He paid legal fees.
He paid legal fees to his lawyer, Michael Cohen. And they said that was an effort to cover up the real nature of the payments, which were somehow involved in thwarting federal election laws. Number one, they don't have any authority. State cannot prosecute federal crimes. And when the judge sent the jury instructions to the jury, they mentioned the federal election crimes, but they didn't make them vote on which crime are you saying that you have a verdict on. So you can't go back, you can't poll a jury and see how many of you thought that the federal felonious side is what, you know, convinced you to vote guilty. Not to mention the fact that the Supreme Court has ruled in the past that in order to get a conviction on a conspiracy, you have to have the jury vote unanimously on the law that they are conspiring to break. That wasn't done either. So Mr. Mershon, the judge here, demonstrated to everybody that the whole point of this thing, which Trump has said all along, was a witch hunt. They just want to be able to call Trump a felon before he went into office. The judge told everybody what sentence he was going to give him. And I wondered about that because he can't put him on probation. Can you imagine the President of the United States answering on probation to some
some
wacky New York judge?
Probation officer, yes.
Yeah. Put him on a payment plan to pay his fines back or pay fines or put him in jail, in a New York jail. He couldn't do any of those things. So an unconditional discharge, no fines, no fees, no probation, no jail, no punishment of any kind. So the only punishment he got was to be a felon. Declared a felon.
Now, will he get his money back that he had to put up for bail or bond or whatever it was?
Yeah, you get that back.
So he'll get that back.
Yeah. I don't know. Did he have to put up a bond?
I don't know.
It was like $400 million. It was ridiculous.
That was a different case.
No.
That's the other case.
Oh,
that's the property case.
It's hard to keep them straight when there were so many of them.
Yeah, that's Letitia James. That's on a civil case.
And those cases, Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it not the case that situation that you're describing, that hasn't even completed the appeals process to the New York State Court of Appeals?
That's right.
Well, Supreme Court.
He couldn't even appeal it until he got sentenced.
So that's still pending, and then he could still appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
Right.
And so there still could all this could be erased.
Right.
But still, like you say, they got the satisfaction of labeling him, quote, a convicted felon, which I think he don't care.
This is reminiscent of what they did with Bob McDonnell. I don't know if you remember Bob McDonnell. He was the governor of Virginia. And they came up with a whole bunch of charges against him and his wife and convicted him. And it went up to the appeals went up to the Supreme Court, which decided 9-0 to throw it out. When was the last time the Supreme Court did anything?
Do you remember?
9-0.
Do you remember who the prosecutor was on
Jack
the,
Smith.
That Jack Smith?
That Jack Smith.
Okay. By the way, dealing with the New York court, apparently Kathy Hochul gave her State of the State thing yesterday.
Oh,
but
really?
She's having a meltdown because she doesn't think she's going to get reelected.
Oh, boo.
Oh, that's so horrible.
Oh. Well, I wonder if she loses the election, does the congestion tax go away?
One wonders. There's a lot of heartburn caused by that, especially with lower economic, socioeconomic classes. You know, if you live in this area and you want to go visit your daughter who lives in another area of the congestion thing, you have to pay $9 every time you move your car.
And also, the tunnels that come in from New Jersey come in below 60th Street.
Yes, they all
do. So if you try to come in, first of all, the toll on the tunnels is something like $20 or something. It's absolutely outrageous. So if you come in from the Holland Tunnel or the Lincoln Tunnel, you are automatically in the congestion zone. That's where the tunnel comes out. So that's another $9 on top of what you just paid to go through this tunnel.
And the only thing I can say is the New York people, they voted for these individuals. So they're getting what they deserve. You know, it's you kind of feel sorry for them. But on the other hand, if you keep voting for morons, don't be surprised if you get moronic decisions.
This is that definition of insanity.
Same thing in California with these fires.
Yes, yeah. Same thing. Yeah.
I mean, Gavin Newsom has not been very forthcoming in his abatement of the fire risk.
Climate change.
Folks, I'm going to make a quick interruption. I'm going to take us away for a second, and you'll hear this again in a few minutes. I just want to invite you to the CCTA meeting. What we're doing is changing to a meeting place will be Moore's Barbecue on Thursday, January 23rd, 6 p.m., Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. And we will have a quick business meeting and just figure out where do we want to go for the upcoming year.
Did you say 6 p.m.? I thought it was 7.
No, it's 6 to 8. And if you want to eat dinner and socialize, come early. At 5:30.
Well, then the notice that I sent is wrong because I said, again, that just like with GCCA, if you want to eat, come around 6:30 and eat between that and 7, and the meeting starts at 7.
Well, we're trying to get it.
We want people
well
to come
enough.
At 5:30 and eat, and we'll start the meeting at 6.
6:30.
Okay. Now back to what else do we want to add to the show?
I have a topic, Bob, that I think
minute and a half or 2 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked in the past several times about how federal agencies take it upon themselves to make these rulings that can have a really substantial negative impact on citizens. And, you know, was it the Chevron case, Pat?
Right, that Chevron policy.
That the federal Supreme Court finally tried to restrict what these agencies can do. But there was one that was announced just the other day, and it has to do with the amount of nicotine in cigarettes. And basically what the CDC came out and said was, well, the manufacturer of cigarettes had to reduce the amount of nicotine by 17-fold reduction. Right now, the average cigarette has 17 milligrams of nicotine per gram or whatever it is of tobacco. They're going to reduce that to less than 1. So they're going from 17 to less than 1, which is going to make it essentially impossible for the farmers in North Carolina to continue to produce tobacco and so on, meet those standards. And why? Because this federal agency decided that they want people to vape instead of smoke cigarettes. And, you know, I'm not a cigarette smoker, never was. I think it's a really bad thing to do health-wise. But it's not the government's responsibility to dictate to people what they do.
Did they learn anything from the prohibition?
Yeah, that's what they're going right back there. What's going to happen is they'll create a black market where people will be growing and selling tobacco that has the nicotine in it.
Right.
And all they're doing is they're going to create more crime. And again, it's these bureaucrats who go ahead and dictate to the rest of us what they think is good for us.
Well, maybe it'll be overturned with the Chevron stuff and it won't happen. But I could see people smoking that much more if it's the nicotine that they're addicted to and they don't want to vape, they want to smoke. They're going to be smoking 3 times as much, and that's going to hurt their health more.
Well, why not buy cigarettes that are shipped across the border from other countries,
yeah,
like the whole world. That
also,
smokes.
Vaping is as bad, if not worse, than smoking.
Health-wise,
it's nothing but a drug induction system, which means we're creating a nation of drug addicts.
And tobacco is still a large cash crop in North Carolina.
Well, you know,
the farmers, it really is.
And this will impact them.
It wasn't, but it is going to have a real sick. But they don't care about that.
But also, we've also seen, Alan, we've also seen where Now, there's a number of Indian tribes that will produce their own cigarettes so that they can avoid that tax stamp. If they're producing their own cigarettes, do their cigarettes have that 17 milligrams, but the other commercial cigarettes only have the less than one?
Now, that could be interesting.
I would think not, because let's face it, when you look at how the rest of their commerce is done, what's on the reservation stays on the reservation.
They have more rights to do some more freedoms in some ways that we think. And this is going to affect not only cigarettes.
Okay, folks, this is cigars
and pipes, too.
This is how we have to end the show. Thanks for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.